It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Gina has the day off. Jeff Jarvis is with us in studio. So is Kevin Marks. We have a lot to talk about, including Muslim rage and Jesus' wife. It's all next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 164, recorded September 19th, 2012. Clover Lover. This Week in Google is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com, click the radio microphone, and use the offer code TWIG. And by Ford. Ford invites tech geeks to join the conversation, submit ideas, and grab a tech geek badge at social.ford.com. It's time for This Week in Google, and we are here today with a kind of an unusual situation. Jeff Jarvis is in studio with us, and he looks, he's got normal flesh-colored skin. Why do you look so pink?
I'm not pink slime.
You're the same exact color I am.
I don't know what it is.
Your flesh looks completely normal. Anyway, it's great to have you.
We have the same hair. You know, it's not even
Because of the advanced age of this panel, we will be taking bathroom breaks every 60 minutes on the show today, just so you
Guaranteed.
Know. Also with us, and I'm actually thrilled to get him because Gina Trapani had to cancel at the last minute, take some time off. But with us right now, Kevin Marks filling in for her. And it's actually a big deal because he is, as you know, an employee of Salesforce. And he's at their big, and I mean big, conference, Dreamforce, going on in San Francisco right now. Thank you for joining us, Kevin.
Thanks for inviting me. Yes, this is huge. There are, I think, 86,000 people registered at Dreamforce.
Wow.
And we've taken over all of Moscone and Moscone and the streets in between and a bunch of hotels. It feels like, you know, South by Southwest walking around between venues. It's pretty huge.
The South by Southwest of CRM. Which is a
not quite as hip a crowd.
So what, you know, I should probably ask, what does Salesforce do?
We do business automation software. We originally it was CRM, customer relationship management, and we've broadened that out into helping businesses contact their customers, the customers contact their businesses, and running a lot of business process stuff. So some of the stuff launched here was. HR automation as well, with the stuff we bought from Ripple, that's now work.com. We launched Salesforce Identity, which is a single sign-on with Salesforce in multiple applications. And we launched Salesforce Touch, which is HTML5-based mobile app development for Salesforce. So we're plugging lots of other bits and pieces in. Basically, the point of all this, and there's, you know, Mark spent 2.5 hours explaining a lot of this morning, is to let the businesses get in contact with their customers and get in contact with each other, members of the business, wherever they happen to be, through the web, hosted, you know, their information hosted on our servers, accessible from anywhere, with APIs and with open HTML5 apps that plug into that as well. So there's a lot of bits to this.
And it's appropriate for the show because it is
the cloud.
The great evangelist of the cloud.
Even a cloud of time for a logo with the cloudiest company of all.
The cloudiest company of them all. And Mark Benioff, you mentioned Mark Benioff, the CEO and founder of Salesforce, considered quite a visionary.
Hell of a salesman, too.
And really a character, I guess.
Yeah.
I haven't met him, but we should get him. I'd love to, if you could help us get him sometime on one of our shows, maybe triangulation.
Oh, he'd be a hoot.
So fascinating.
Yeah. I interviewed him once for a charity event. I was the last minute. Luckily, the audience didn't know it was supposed to be Jimmy Kimmel interviewing them, and they got me. But he's a fascinating character, and plus he does a lot of charitable stuff.
Jeff Jarvis comes right before Kimmel in the photo. It's actually perfect, yeah. So, Kevin is in the lobby at Moscone Center where he's on Wi-Fi. And so the sound and the video may not be perfect, but, you know, Kevin likes to
likes to live dangerously and do the show from the outside world. So I think
he's made
good.
Up today of about 4 pixels, I think.
And, but we know what he looks like, so it's okay. Squint when you look at him.
I could try 4G instead, but that makes
No. Let's stay there. Let's stay there. Hey, though, I have to say something about 4G. You know, the iPhone 5 was announced this past week. It's coming out on Friday, and it is an LTE phone. And I, you know, it's been really interesting to Verizon has LTE here. I'm sure you have the choice of AT&T and Verizon in New York. San Francisco has both too. It is so fast right now. And I've been told it used to be faster, but it was I got 23 megabits down and something like 18 megabits up.
Now, how much will that degrade with
on my Razer Max HD? Well, and that's the question is, what's going to happen when I think the last count we're saying 4 million new iPhone users suddenly swamp the network. It's going to be very interesting. They're not all on Verizon or AT&T, but say 1 million.
Well, that's a good point, though. When the phone came out, everybody swamped one network. So that's our memory. Now they'll
be swapping three. Should be much nicer.
Yeah.
Much better for all. Well, no, because they're selling a lot more phones. So they sold twice as many phones this past weekend, you know, on launch weekend as they did with the iPhone 4S. Twice as many phones.
One of your staffers was telling me earlier about a Jimmy Kimmel routine.
I didn't see it. Speaking of the Kimmel.
Went out and showed people.
Oh, he was showing them an iPhone 4S.
But convinced them
saying
it was the 5.
The new iPhone. And they were fine. They said, "Oh, well, here I'll show. We could. Show, good, I good. Suppose we'll get. We could play a little bit of it here. First, look at the iPhone 5 from the Jimmy Kimmel show. You don't? Are you getting audio from me? Am I muted?
I believe your YouTube app is.
Those bastards. It's almost as if the new iPhone somehow ruins the old iPhone, but it doesn't. It's all in your head. In fact, we set a camera out on the street today.
It's all in
we
your
told
head.
People outside to check out the new iPhone.
Apple's
5,
line is it just
which
works.
Is unavailable.
Jimmy's line is it's all in your head.
Say that to a fanboy and see what happens.
iPhone 4S that everyone has. And well, here's how that experiment played out.
First look, iPhone 5.
The new iPhone 5 just came out today. We
wait a minute, more important. Wait a minute, more important.
Breaking news.
We now have the first Clovers. Thank you, Matt. So they do have decaf clover. Cheers.
Cheers.
Matt, did you make it in 90 seconds?
I tried. It was painful.
He ran the whole... Come here, Matt. He ran the whole way.
Yeah.
By the way, this is the only guy who dresses to work here. What's your last name?
Kinkle.
Matt Kinkle. I don't even know. He's our intern, and he's done a great job. But thank you. This is a Malawi single bean. Did the barista say anything? Do you say anything about you like anything I should know about this before I try it?
Nothing notable. It's very hot, though.
Nothing notable. It's very. They say that. They say you should wait. Kevin, drink. They say you should wait 90 seconds before you try it.
Wait, Leo, you owe Matt.
Oh, that's good. Oh, I think we spilled a little on your green tie. I'm sorry.
No.
Thanks, Matt. You know what? That's actually quite.
Well, that is pretty good. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. All right. You could drink it without cream and sugar. Do you want some? Should we get you some?
No. Okay. I'm fine. No, I'm a real man.
All right. Anyway, we don't need to run the rest of the Jimmy Kimmel video. You get the idea. People were astounded by the iPhone 4S. And we're in a kind of, in an Android world, we're kind of in a similar boat here because this is the new Kindle HD, the 7-inch Kindle HD, which I just got the other day. And if you put it next to, say, a Nexus 7 or even the original Kindle Fire, it's kind of hard to tell the difference between one and the other. I know you're a big Nexus 7.
I'm now a huge Nexus 7 fan.
You know, here's the deal. They're the same price. So you'd be crazy not to get a Nexus 7. It's running Jelly Bean, pure Jelly Bean instead of...
It has all the Google apps.
Google apps. You'd be crazy not to get this.
And I use Kindle like crazy on my Nexus 7, and it works beautifully.
And they're making a big deal about the Dolby dual speaker. Here, I'll play you some audio. In fact, I've got my, this is my book on tape
so-called
running.
Fringe merchants. The heavy losses in Bomber Command led to
Churchill. It's good on voice. I guess I'll play a movie and you can see. It's not super amazingly brilliant sound. Here's Iron Man 2. We'll play that. This is, by the way, if you're an Amazon Prime, this is a free from the Amazon streaming. Oh, and this is the other thing they were chatting, which
irritate everybody on the airplane.
I kind of like is the X-ray feature. So you can, as you're watching the movie, if it's not irritating enough that you got all the controls there, as you're watching the movie, you can press the X-ray feature and learn more about Mickey Rourke. I want to know what's wrong with
his... What a bad actor he is.
I want to know what's wrong with his fingernails. That's what I want. So it's a little dark. You can kind of... Let me zip it ahead a little bit here. But you hear the sound. It's not going to...
How does that... This is a silly question, but...
But it's enough to watch it.
Yeah, it's fun.
I don't think it's much better than the seven
episodes of Downton Abbey on this thing.
Yeah, and if you're listening to headphones, which you should be doing,
yes,
it will undoubtedly sound.
I was next to a guy on the plane who was using a small tablet a few weeks ago, and he was playing the game full volume up with no headphones.
That's annoying. Not really allowed. Annoying. Sorry.
All right, so show me a book.
Yeah, you want to see a book?
Yeah, because the Kindle on this looks good.
Yeah, I would say this is
so it's no better.
But do you have WhisperSync on there? Do you have that new audio video WhisperSync feature? That's a nice. I have to show you this. This is kind of a nice feature. So I'm reading an Agatha Christie novel, The Mysterious. By the way, in order to promote this, Amazon is giving away 20 public domain books, including David Copperfield and this. This is an Agatha Christie, The Mysterious Affair Styles. But watch, this is kind of cool. When you get the Kindle book for free, you go to Audible, you get the Audible book for free. So it's 20 Audible books, classics, Ethan Frome, Huckleberry Finn, stuff like
Which
that.
Which should be the way it works anyway.
Yeah, but these are public domain. But they're using good readers. And here is the audio. I don't know if you're going to be able to hear this.
That's,
But what it does is it's highlighting the text. I have been asked both by my friend. Now, this isn't the.
That's an important deal. That's an important deal for students. I'm on the.
Huge.
I'm on the board of Learning Ally, the former Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic.
Yeah.
And they spent a lot of money to arrange just that.
This is phenomenal.
Yeah. That's a big deal.
It highlights it. It also does whisper sync between audio and text, so you can listen in the car, then get home and start reading on the Kindle.
Yeah, that's cool.
And you'll jump to where you were on the Kindle. You can listen on a variety of devices. And okay, so here's the pros on this device. It's easy. So I think somebody who's focused on content consumption in the Amazon world is going to be thrilled because you don't even have to log into your Amazon account. When you get it, it's already associated to your account. It's got big icons.
I watched my daughter trying to help my mother-in-law with a new iPad.
Perfect for that.
Yeah,
it's great for consuming Amazon content. Of course, it has the store, and Amazon's very much in your face on this. That might be a negative. But if you're an Amazon lover and you're getting a lot of content from Amazon, it's great. It's decently fast, but it's not as fast as a Nexus 7 or even or an iPad. But so the real issue is this was a great choice at $200 when nothing was $200.
Yes.
But now you can get the Nexus 7.
Which is just really amazing.
And I think for anybody who listens to this show, certainly, the Nexus 7 is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
But for somebody who is not a geek, who just wants to consume content, I actually think this is not a horrid choice. It's got a big bezel.
You know what, Leo, the irony is that the Nexus 7 really should have cellular service in it.
Right. Well, it will, right. I'm sure.
It will, as you showed when you open it up.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make much sense without it, whereas that's fine without it.
Right.
It doesn't have all those other
You'll
apps.
Load it up. And you can, by the way, the next version, the 8.9-inch, will have a $50 a year version of 3G. But, it'll only be 250 megabytes a month. buy the Nexus 7 unless... you're somebody who just is going to consume.
Buy the Nexus 7 for yourself and buy that for your grandma.
Yeah, this is for grandma.
Yeah.
Kevin Marks is... I've been vamping because we dropped out Kevin Marks. He was so jealous he had to run to the Starbucks.
Now, we used to have one of those machines at Google when I was there.
Yeah.
Of course you would, yes.
In building 45. And it makes very nice coffee.
It does. It's brewed coffee. It's not espresso. I'm kind of a fan of the espresso drink. So let's talk. Gosh, there's so much to talk about.
There's
Can we just mention Twitter briefly?
Yeah.
Because what the hell? First, they close off the app ecosystem. They basically say to developers, thanks, move along here. We'll take care of the third party stuff. Then now they just removed third party image services from their app. So if you're TwitPic or YFrog or TwitVid, bye bye. See you later. Now, the newest thing that they've done is they've replaced the app on iOS, what was at least a decent app when they bought it from Tweety, with a piece of crap.
I haven't seen it yet.
Everybody is just very upset. There's no links. You can't click links in it. The only way to see the content of a tweet is to open the tweet individually, and then you can see more. It wastes space. I don't have an iOS device here, so I can't show you. But it's really – well, go ahead. Have you updated
Twitter?
No, I don't.
Well, we can update it while we're talking.
It's just – yeah, what do you think, Kevin? Have you played with it?
It was lit. I mean, what it feels like is the Android app, and the iPad app was better.
Right.
It had that multiple page thing where you could keep pulling things across, and it would work. That's all gone now. It now behaves much more like, the Android app.
Here comes the iPad. Here comes the iPad. So it does look like the. In fact, it's exactly like the Android version of the app. Yeah.
But except that they closed it. Hang on. Except that they open tweets in line now. So
right.
If you click a tweet, it'll expand in line. And if there's one that has a
here's some links. Great interview. Yeah. It's got a YouTube link. In order to go to it, now once I open it, I've got the video
which,
here. And
then that's
which
the whole
pretty.
Point of this. They don't want you to go anywhere else. They want you to watch everything on Twitter.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So everything opens in line like that.
But I was talking to somebody on Twitter this week, and they said, "Well, don't you want to have the kind of best experience?" And that's why Twitter is making all these dictates about what's right. Except Twitter isn't necessarily giving us the best experience.
This isn't the best experience. That's the problem. Look at this. When you go into this realm, look at all this wasted space here. This is all stuff they could have.
Yeah.
It occurred to me this week. Twitter is like a brother-in-law that you can't quite figure out. You love your sister. You figure she's got to see something in him, and you've had some fun at Thanksgiving, but he keeps on doing weird stuff.
Yeah.
Well,
this isn't weird. That's the problem, is this is completely understandable if you think, well, what Twitter wants to do is close off the third-party ecosystem and make sure everybody consumes the ads that go along with Twitter. The problem is, what's sad about this is, they've taken what was a great UI, Tweety.
Yes.
And they have basically taken all the goodness out of it and replaced it with a crappy UI. And it feels to me like it's a cynical move.
The problem is they're not saying enough. I urged, we'll see if this happens, but I urged Twitter to bring Dick Costolo to our show.
Yes,
he's speaking at the.
That's it on that, I guess.
They need to be able to say more. He's going to speak at the Online News Association.
He could win us over.
He really could. He's a comedian. He could work with humor. But what I said was that all right, they make an argument that you want this button on every tweet, and then they stop there. What they should do is go on and say, and here's why. Here's the rationale behind it. Or even if they say, we know you liked that, but here's why we had to change it. Here's how it affects our business. I think they've got to communicate more, and they communicated so little. Now, in the early days, there was a lot of, A, turmoil, and B, they weren't sure what the hell they were. But if they now have a vision, then I think that Dick and company have to communicate that to users and developers, and then we might understand better, and we might get it. And I understand they've got to be a business. It's the same as a newspaper that says we've got to cut back to 3 days a week so we can survive. You don't like it, but you get it.
John Gruber writes, they threw away Lauren Brichter, he wrote to Tweety, groundbreaking UI, replaced it with a timeline where you can't tap anything, URLs, usernames, hashtags, images. Instead, you have to open the tweet first. I can't remember the last time I saw a Twitter client in which you couldn't tap URLs from the timeline. Josh Topolsky says,
that is ridiculous.
Let me be perfectly clear. The previous Twitter for iPad was one of the apps you used to show off the iPad. It was awesome. Not anymore. And so I'm sure everybody else, in fact, Malik asked, maybe everybody at Twitter too, now we're using Tweetbot.
For as long as we can. When is the moment going to come when they are going to cut off?
Is that going to happen?
It has to.
That's the issue.
They're going to just shut off at some point. That's going to be, nuclear winter, but they're going to just say no more.
How far can you push the bottom line before you actually have the negative impact of losing users?
I don't know. And it happened, too, in the case where they had to hand over the tweets for the Occupy Wall Street. And they fought hard not to do that. They fought hard to say that it's our stuff. They went the right way. But the thing that finally pushed them over was when the court demanded their financial statements and threatened a fine.
Right.
So I get the economics of it, but it's still economics.
Do the 140 million users, of whom all but 2 million are completely normal people, even know this is happening or care?
No.
400 million daily tweets, that means a few hundred thousand of us are complaining.
Yes.
And the rest are going.
Right.
But I think that doesn't, you know, doesn't that have some impact potentially on Twitter and things like trying to draw great staff?
Oh, yeah.
If you started selling out and advertising crap,
that's a good
some
point.
Of these people, you know, would start looking.
What do you think of that, Kevin? I mean, you're a programmer. You know technology. You know tech people.
I do think it's a shame. I mean, I was at the XOXO conference up in Portland this weekend, and some of the original Twitter guys were there, and Blaine was there and Rabble was there, and they were looking sad about this as well, and looking at what can we do to build an open version of this, and is that something we can actually achieve? There was definitely a lot of that thought in the air there. I think what you said was, significant. I think they went on the today to launch this version. So they are pushing this out for a mainstream audience who are apparently not tweeting much. My worry is, the things that we find annoying about this are the same things that the celebrities that all these people are signing up to Twitter to join in with, to listen to, will find annoying. And if they're not careful, they're going to end up. It would stop being the place where the famous people banter with each other as well.
And then, not just famous people, Kevin, but also brands, right? If a brand wants to promote something, a media brand wants to promote something, and they want that link to cause traffic to go to their site, if that starts dropping, they're gonna not see Twitter as a good way to promote themselves.
Right, but that's true. I mean, but I was thinking more about, a lot of what makes Twitter is the conversation, the banter, the fact that you can have a random conversation with anyone, including famous people, and they will sometimes retweet you or whatever. And that's the draw of it. But there are things they've done that made that harder. So some of the stuff they've done is supposed to make that better. But they what I find is that the sort of back and forth stuff that used to be easy is not as easy with this. Now, I'm still using custom clients, and when I'm using those, things are fine. But definitely I'll be using this one a lot less, but this is something I'd use some of the time. Normally I'm using Echo Phone on the Mac, or yep. I use the Twitter client on the Android, but I've got my own hacked thing that turns tweets into notifications on Android so that they end up looking like that, even if you can see that.
Well, that's interesting. That becomes your Twitter timeline, is your notifications.
Yes. So it's not all, every notification, every tweet that I get gets notifications. It's somewhat filtered. I've got filters on it.
The ones you want. Where'd you get that? Did you write that yourself?
I forked. There's an open source thing called NanoTweeter that was written 3 years ago, and I forked it a little bit so that it did the newer updates. It's open source. It's up on.
This is why, by the way, everyone should learn to code.
But I need to clean it up and actually, hand it out properly.
I swear, if you're in high school now or college and you're not learning how to write code, basic code, you're not literate.
What was it? Was it Estonia, I think, that decreed that all elementary school children will now learn to code?
I hope so. What?
You know,
that was the theme of the MIT Introduction to Programming book, which is now available online, by the way. And I'll give you the URL in a second. I think it's sicp.org. They say in the intro, this is a course for everybody, not for computer scientists, mm-hmm. because basic literacy requires understanding how this stuff works. Well, I think that's, unfortunately, that's kind of
I think it's the case, but it also is a way to think. One of the former heads of research said at Google at an event I went to in New York, is you want to think algorithmically. You don't necessarily just want to code. Right. You want to think in that kind of
exactly.
logic.
Or at least understand that.
And it wouldn't be that, compared to the cost of going to the moon, how many moonshots would we enable? How much innovation would we enable if we trained every school child to code?
Is that nuts, Kevin? I mean,
no, it makes sense to teach people to do it. AIOU in the chat just pointed to khanacademy.org/cs.
There's lots of places to learn. There's Udacity. There's Coursera, which just added 33 new universities. I mean, there's lots of places.
I just wrote a post.
Bulmer College One's good because it's, you know, that's where people are already learning maths and physics, and they've built a very nice interactive editor there. I don't know if you played with that, but they've got a...
At Khan Academy, really? Code Academy.
Khan Academy.
Not Khan, Code Academy.
No, Khan.
Khan Academy? They have an... Really?
Yeah, have a play with it. He showed it off at Disrupt last week. But he launched it before then. Oops, I didn't want to launch that browser.
Wow, that's neat. Good for him. Yeah. Sal Khan is amazing. We've got to get him on one of our shows here. So they have a code thing now, too. Wow.
I just wrote a post for the Nieman Lab, which is a really, really good site that covers my wonky world of journalism, trying to outline what I think is the future of training journalists. And you know, we've learned that the classroom is a rotten place to teach technology tools.
I agree.
Right, because everybody's at different spots, different ambition.
You don't teach programming by lecture.
No. So what we need to do is, A, research the outcomes that are needed to know what to do in your career, and then, B, curate the stuff that's already out there, like Khan Academy and all this great stuff on YouTube. And another story I think in here is that YouTube is doing a grant of money to the best YouTube educators. So it's going to get better and better and better. Then universities and schools can still add value. We add tutoring and certification and context.
Absolutely. One-on-one is valuable. Fine. But
the basics of how to learn how to, this tool, you learn online.
I love... Robert, getting back to our Twitter. Story, and then we'll get... Actually, I want to cover this code thing, too. But Robert X. Cringely, writing in InfoWorld, says, you know that blue bird Twitter uses as its mascot? Turns out it's really a stool pigeon. We reported last week that a judge had ordered Twitter, Judge Matthew Sciarino Jr., had ordered Twitter to hand over private information about Malcolm Harris. He's the... Occupy Wall Street protester, and in fact said, if you don't do it, you're going to have to give me your private financial statements, Twitter, so that I can come up with a large enough fine to sting you. So now it's not merely his public tweets, which I understand. You know, the judge says, look, you shouted out an open window. It's public now.
Right. Now, some are still arguing that only depends if someone was listening and the whole world wasn't listening. But I agree with the judge on that, to that extent.
And by the way, it's a $250 fine that Harris is facing. they demanded more than 3 months worth of Harris's tweets, which Harris said is the legal equivalent of busting a party with loud noise and demanding my phone records for 3.5 months to see if I helped plan it.
Yep.
Not a bad point.
Yep.
I don't know if they're asking for more than just that. It sounds like they're not.
Both are standing up on a matter of principle and precedent here, which is vital. And you know, again, Twitter, the irony.
But Twitter
the brother-in-law. So Twitter, at one point, AMAC fought for what was right here for a long time and argued that this is our stuff. Yet at the same time, now you have a company that just announced today, GNIP, or NIP, I don't know if you pronounce the G or not.
Yeah.
GNIP.
They have the fire hose.
They have the fire hose, and now they're going to offer the entire history of tweets. Well...
Going back to 2006?
Yes. Now, wouldn't it be nice if
we didn't know that Twitter
could have
had
that
stuff, because we can only go back a few thousand tweets.
We go back to the principle that Twitter argued in this case is that the tweets are owned by the user. Then can I have them, please?
No. Sorry. And GNIP doesn't give that for free, by the way. You have to pay for that access.
Oh, no.
Full historical. I mean, when Gina comes back next week, I'm going to ask her about this, because this is something of great use to her and think up. Full historical access to the Twitter fire hose. Available exclusively from GNIP. This is the one and only, to my knowledge, company that Twitter did license the fire hose to from day one. Of course, they don't say what the price is. You have to contact.
Have a salesperson contact you. Yes.
A salesman will call.
So you know Kellen did the first year. Have you seen that?
No.
Yeah, Kellen.io/old tweets. And you can search for, you know, you can search for yourself and see what you said and your original tweets.
So, did they buy it?
No, well, Kellen crawled it.
Oh, he...
Okay. He sniped every ID number to try and find the right ones that actually had tweets on.
So, if I do Leo Laporte, this will show every tweet I've ever done?
No, this only starts in 2006 to 2007. So, it's the first year of Twitter.
So, this is 2007. So these are actually people speaking to me. Huh.
Right, okay.
Just read all the Twitters for Leo Laporte and I, Justine. Not sure why I did it. My head hurts and I have to poo.
This thing will go nowhere.
This is from February 2007. Wow.
Right.
Huh.
So, yeah, I thought there was a way to see all of your own, but maybe not.
Stalking Leo Laporte. So these are people talking about me. I wonder if maybe because I didn't tweet much, Jimmy Wales says something to me. Look at, I even knew Jimmy Wales in those days. He was actually talking to me.
Hey, he's talking to me as well. that's it. Yeah, if you didn't, no. I thought there was a way to click on a user and get the.
Maybe do I have to put at Leo Laporte? No, but then no, that would just get the ads.
Messages, yeah.
He has a syntax here somewhere, so I'll. But that's very interesting. So he's been crawling it all this time.
Well, so he wrote a bot that would go. Basically, he was doing it by user ID, status ID. So he started with one that went up and wrote some code to work out where they actually were.
User ID colon $ screen name. See if I knew how to. Oh, you don't need the dollar sign. There we go. And then.
There you go. Then you got all of them, yeah.
No. Maybe I do need a dollar sign. No.
Yeah, it's right. User ID colon Kevin Marks. I just did that.
It did work, huh?
Were you on then, or was it one of the times you quit?
Probably was one of the times. I don't know how far back it goes. There's Kevin Marks.
His first tweet,
ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Marks, December 11th, 2006, sneezing and heading for bed.
Kevin wouldn't shake my hand yesterday because he had the ague again.
Oh, my goodness.
Got to do something here, Kevin. Back.
Wow, this is kind of, so that's, but this is, not, that's not illicit, right? He's been scraping them and saved them in his own database.
Yeah.
The judge should have just used that.
Well, this is 2006 to 2007.
Ah, it's okay. So he must not be the time period when I was tweeting.
Yeah. It was interesting, actually. When he first put this up, a bunch of people went through and found the first at replies and the first hashtags and all that stuff. It's quite fun for that.
Wow, that's very cool.
It is cool.
I wonder if he can find the Donald Trump tweets. Apparently, what's the headline that you wrote? I love this. Twitter has become a haven for celebrities.
It's a medium for moguls unfiltered to make fools of themselves. So Donald Trump goes after poor Kate Middleton and basically just says, it's your fault, honey.
She shouldn't have taken her top off. But she didn't know there were paparazzi with long lenses.
Twitter's been amusing this week. The other week, we were joking before the show about the amazing Jesus wife hashtag that's there because fragment of a document was found that makes reference to Jesus wife. My favorite moment of this week was seeing the Muslim rage hashtag. Newsweek had a rather outrageous cover arguing that there was Muslim rage, which was just was slamming billions of people as if they all thought the same. And then they asked, you know, hey, come and talk about our cover, hashtag Muslim rage. The beautiful part was that people took it over, especially Muslims.
Good.
And so, you know, for example, women saying, I'm having a great hair day and no one can see it. Muslim rage. And the humor and the humanity of it was just magnificent. So to have that and Jesus' wife in the same week showing humor around religion is kind of a wonderful thing. And that's the great thing about the hashtag, which, by the way, Twitter didn't invent.
The shawarma guy wraps my sandwich too tightly, so I have to rip off little pieces of paper bit by bit. Muslim rage. Wow. This is great. So there's it's Wired really Threat Level blog has a compilation of, it says, comedy ensues as Twitter users hijack Newsweek's Muslim rage hashtag. This is what Twitter was made for.
This is exactly
I
what
think.
For, yes.
Yeah. This is a great use of
it's
Twitter.
It's what I'm saying. It's banter. It's like being collectively silly, and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
But it's more than that. It also it brought a humanity and that I think we desperately need now, and it became a counterpoint to Newsweek. I argued in Newsweek at one point on Twitter at one point, that Newsweek was acting like a troll. It was doing exactly what trolls do, which I talked about, you know, in terms of the video that was out there. It was trying to incite a reaction and did it to do that and got the reaction. Zeynep Tufekci, whom I quoted last week on the show, TechSock on Twitter, said, no, Jarvis has a difference here. She's very, very smart and catches me up. And said a troll is someone you don't know. A troll is some anonymous bozo.
Right.
Newsweek has a power. So their behavior is trollish, but they have much more power than a troll.
What do you call it? Sensationalism?
But you were interviewing that chap from the Daily Beast yesterday, whose name I has escaped me. And he said, yeah, we do do that on purpose, pretty much, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's called link bait in the blog world. I don't know what you call it on a magazine cover, but it's the same
yellow
idea.
Journalism.
Yellow journalism. Called, yeah. Yeah. Sensationalism.
Yeah.
And it's as old as newspapers.
As Mr. Hearst.
Yes, that's right. Who invented that and created a war. Let's take a break. I'm sure we have to. Yes. We need to calm down and drink some more of this clover coffee. I'm already buzzing on the Malawi. This stuff, but it's good.
It's good. It's very
And you know,
good.
It doesn't, and this is another, apparently another selling point of this. And by the way, they didn't buy ads. If they did, I would happily accept their money, but they haven't paid me a penny for this. In fact, we paid them for this.
Yes.
But one of the selling points, supposedly, of the machine, the Clover machine that we got here at the local Starbucks, is that the coffee stays fresh longer.
It so far seems
and
to.
So far so good.
Yeah.
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 Drinking decaf.
It's sad. It's sad. Blame my cardiologist. So.
Really? Because, you know, I think everybody says coffee's good for you now.
It's the caffeine and it's the...
You should have him read more... read more of those sensationalist trade press.
Yeah.
We're brought to you today by our friends at Stamps.com. Disintermediating the United States Postal Service one consumer at a time. With the happy cooperation of the U.S. Postal Service. They love Stamps.com. Why go to the post office when you could print postage yourself, right? This is legal. I'm not talking counterfeiting. I'm talking using your computer, your printer, no special ink, no postage meter, just Stamps.com. And it's not just the stamp. It's not just the postage. The mailing labels, everything you need, you could print right onto an envelope. It could take addresses out of QuickBooks, for instance, print your invoices, print the envelopes with the postage on them. Looks more professional. It works great. If you're an Amazon or eBay seller, it'll take the data from there so you don't have to cut and paste or type your own mailing labels. I know people actually keep IBM Selectrix around so they can type on envelopes.
Yes. Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
You don't have to do that. Stamps.com, they do the whole thing for you. These modern printers today, they can do anything. I want you to try Stamps.com now. We've got a special offer for you. If you go to Stamps.com, postage only a click away. You see special offer, $80 value. You might be tempted to go, oh, yeah, I'll take it. No, stop. Up in the upper right-hand corner, there's a old-fashioned radio microphone. Click that and use the offer code TWIG. That $80 special deal, $110, $110, $55 in free postage. You get the digital scale. We love those. In fact, we got two of them because we love them so much. The $5 supply kit, the four-week trial. A no-risk trial offer for you and worth $110 if you go to Stamps.com and use the offer code TWIG for this week in Google TWIG. Really is a if you don't want to go to the post office, and I don't know anybody who wants to go to the post office, this is a great solution for you. Stamps.com for a small business, a business like ours, is the best. And we thank them for their support of this week in Google. Failure is a feature, says The Verge. Google gobbles up startups to stay sharp.
It's a it's almost a TLDR from The Verge. It's very, very long, but it's actually a good piece on looking at their...
What is... I see TLDR. What does that mean?
TLDR?
Yeah.
It means too long didn't read.
Too long didn't read.
The great thing about it is the...
I see that all the time. I never knew what
proper
it meant.
Punctuation is TL, semicolon.
Semicolon, rather.
DR.
Too long, didn't semicolon, read. Didn't read.
Yeah.
And when are you supposed to use that? Do I need a rubber stamp?
I think when somebody, like Reddit, I think it started. I think it was on Reddit where people went and said, you know, you link to it and they come back and say, no,
too
I'm
long,
not bothering, fella.
Read.
You can tell me to read it, I'm not going to.
It's the new insouciance.
But this is it's TL but red. TLBR.
TLBR.
Yeah.
So what is the thesis? Because it's too long, I didn't read it. I saw lollipops, and that's it.
Basically just recounting the various startups that Google has bought and saying
And it started
they've
with
done a good job.
The most recent acquisition of Snapseed, which I am very unhappy about.
Ah, do tell.
And I know Trey Ratcliffe wrote a little bit about it, but he's too diplomatic, and he likes the Google folks too much, to be honest. So here's the problem. Nix Software, which is the company they bought, is really a fantastic company that makes plugins for Lightroom, Photoshop, and Aperture that are used not only by pros everywhere. Every time we interviewed a pro on TwitPhoto, they said, oh, I love Silver FX or one of the other NIP plugins. But a lot of amateurs like me use it, and it really is very valuable. It seems to me the case that they bought it not because of that, but because of their app Snapseed, which is an iOS app, which I imagine Google wants. It's a very nice, easy-to-use photo
filter. And they need their Instagram
answer. It's a consumer app. And they, I think, and I would imagine, yeah, exactly. I would imagine they'll fold this into Picasa, maybe even, you know, into other Google apps. And I really fear for the future of the Nick plugins, which are really, really great. And I suspect that that has nothing to do with why Google acquired them. So this, you know, it may even be an acquire, you know, one of those hires where you get these guys. And that's one of the things that bugs me about these big companies. Facebook does it all the time. Google does it, too. They buy companies for the people, and they shut down the products. Dropio, which was a Sam Lessen's fantastic, useful
tool, Facebook, right?
Was bought by Facebook.
Yep. And Sam just immediately. Hired. Yeah.
Yeah. But Jaiku is the Google one.
Oh, and you know me. I love Jaiku. I thought Jaiku was so much better than Twitter, and obviously I was wrong.
There's a nice chart lower in the story, Chad.
Well, we don't know. You know. At the time they bought it, they were had about the same number of users, but they took all the engineers off it and got them working on mobile apps and brought Yuri to Mountain View to try and explain social to them, which
didn't work. And now Yuri's doing his own thing.
Yeah.
And they open sourced Jaiku, but it's too late now, right?
It was too late, and it was also another iteration of Jaiku. So
they need critical mass.
Right.
They ported Jaiku to App Engine. Mostly Andy did that, and then they open sourced that, yeah. But I think then they actually shut down the hosted version as well.
This is a great, if it's too long, didn't read Ben Cooper's article, at least there's a great infographic.
With a nice little menu.
Yes.
So when Larry Page took over as CEO, his first move was to restructure the company to 7 groups: Search, YouTube, Chrome and Apps, Geocommerce, Mobile, Social, and Ads. And they show how all the app acquisitions going back to 2001 are funneled into those 7 different groups and where everything went. I suppose Jaiku's in here somewhere. There's so many.
Jaiku's bottom row, yeah.
Bottom row. Jaiku, there it is.
2007
went into social. That's kind of depressing, frankly. I don't even like looking at it. And I'm sure, but for people like Yuri, that's great. They got a
This is the new exit strategy.
Yeah, this is the exit strategy.
This is it. Yeah.
And I think that that's bad for innovation. I think that companies that are saying, "Let's build something so that Yahoo or Google will buy us." Now Yahoo's going to be the one with the deep pockets. $2.4 billion going into Yahoo's pockets.
Alibaba. It's not all going in their pockets.
Uh-oh, what happened?
Marissa changed, and she was going to keep it as a war chest, and then various investors went after her. So she's returning most of that to the investors. $3.x billion.
I was really hoping to get a little bit of that.
Yeah. She's keeping, I think, $400 million.
Is that enough? No, I want more. I thought if she had $2.4 billion, she'd give me 10% at least. that's too bad.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. Speaking of Marissa Mayer, I was a little perturbed by the fact that everybody used the headline "Marissa Mayer buys iPhone 5s for employees."
And she didn't.
She didn't.
The headline should be "Marissa Mayer bought everything but Blackberries for employees."
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
She said, "You have a choice."
Nokia did a headline which is "Marissa Mayer buys whatever their model number is for all employees."
The Lumia 920. That's a better headline. It's talk about sensationalism and link bait. That's the link bait. She didn't buy iPhone 5s for everybody. She offered them iPhone 5s, Galaxy S3s, HTC Ones, Lumia 920s. As you said, everything but the BlackBerry they had been giving their employees. Oh well, sorry. Got me on a little.
So the acquisition thing, that was another thing at XOXO conference. They had a bunch of people who built websites a long time ago get up and talk. Matt Howey.
I love Matt.
And Chris Paul of 4chan. That was interesting. But they were both saying, "We built this thing. We want to keep it running." They also both said, the amount of revenue we're getting from the advertising is going down rapidly because everyone's switching to mobile, and then we don't get paid for ads on mobile.
So they had the Facebook problem before Facebook had it.
Right. And Chris Paul said he's actually losing money on 4chan at the moment, which I suppose is not surprising.
Oh, that's sad.
You're not going to make much advertising from people on 4chan. They've been running ad blockers.
Yeah, how did he ever make money?
Yeah, Moot also said, "I'm not in it for the money. This is a hobby," right?
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Yeah, and he's making money from Canvas, which he got venture funding for. So.
Yeah. Canvas is actually a very interesting product.
Yeah. That's quite cute. So it's Image Remix. It's kind of like what's the other one?
Mixel, right?
Mixel, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Coivens.
Which also got shut down and pivoted. And everybody's dying.
But this was interesting. People saying building things and keeping them going, and that's a challenge.
Is part of the problem at 4chan, and this is actually something germane to me, is Mark M. in the chat room saying ads on 4chan where 90% of the users use Adblock. Is that a problem? Is it going to be difficult to make money if you appeal to an intelligent, tech-literate audience?
I think it is. Jenny Jardin had a tussle with her users this week via Twitter.
Redesign on Boing Boing.
On Boing Boing, and people saying, you know, use Adblock. And she said, if I may use this language, she said, okay, if you're going to use the Adblock software, okay, just don't be a dick about it. Because that's how we make our living.
But how can you
that's
not
how
be?
We
if
provide
you're using
this.
It, you are being a dick.
I think so, too.
If I go to Boing Boing, there's an ad for a festival, State Farm.
That's how they're
American
making a go
apparel.
Of it.
This was one of the first federated media sites.
Yep.
And if you love Boing Boing...
What's the point? What are you proving by saying, oh, I can't see an ad. It's an ugly thing. It's ridiculous. And now this gets me going, Leo. You know,
but, it is kind of ugly in the news.
But now we have the fact that Google has to go along, so it's going to now include a do not track option.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Right. We talked about that on security now. Do not track, which is and it's a web standard. Actually, I'm glad we have you on, Kevin Marks, because Kevin Marks is an expert on standards on the web and a strong proponent of open standards. And the Apache Foundation made an interesting decision. So there is apparently a standard set for do not track. This is a setting in the browser. There are three choices in the browser. It can be unset, which is, by the way, according to the standard, the default. Am I not right?
That's what it's supposed to be.
And then if you set it, then you're saying, I wish to make sure that ad companies do not use tracking cookies on me. And if you say, okay, go ahead, you know, please do track. So you can have... unset, do not track, or do track. The default, according to the open standard, is unset. Right, Kevin?
Yes.
The Apache Foundation has decided to ignore the setting in Internet Explorer 10, the next version of IE, because Microsoft, when you choose automatic settings, not when you customize it, but when you choose automatic settings, turns do not track on.
Right.
Deciding for its users, probably correctly so, that if they only knew what tracking cookies were, they would block them. I know. You hate it when I say that. Just as Apple decided third-party cookies would be wrong on
only if you
Safari.
Express it in a certain way. If you want to starve your friends at Boing Boing, that's another matter.
Well, and this is related to that Boing Boing,
exactly.
Which is why I bring it up. So the folks at Apache said because there's a standard and the standard is unset, we are going to ignore the setting. It needs to be explicitly set by users for us to pay attention to it.
Right.
Kevin, is that the right answer?
It's a kind of an arms race, and that's the problem. The problem is, you know, part of this is Microsoft is doing this partly as a way to poke at Google, I'm almost convinced. Just to say, aha, we can turn off ad tracking and that will hurt Google and we're the biggest browser, or we were. And that there's a bit of that going on there, almost certainly.
And Google had, until this week, not had a do-not-track option in Chrome, although they say now it's going to be coming
by
the end of the year.
They're
going to
add one, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is really, you know, reasonable. It's a standard. It makes some sense. People aren't there. The challenge is explaining to the user what this is, and that's a problem. And it's like the EU cookie directive. There's now a directive you have to explain that you're using cookies. So every time you go to a British website, there's this little thing in the corner saying, "Hi, we're using cookies. Click here to have us explain cookies to you."
Dismiss. You're dismissed now, Jeeves. It says yes.
Yeah. So
and I think, in my opinion, part of the issue is that the word tracking cookie is unnecessarily inflammatory.
Absolutely.
These are ad customization cookies. And if you said to people, I wish somebody would do a poll. I wish Gallup would do a poll saying, how do you feel about ad customization? Would you prefer to have customized ads or not? Yes or no?
Yeah.
And then say, how do you feel about tracking cookies? Would you prefer to have tracking cookies on or off? It would be the exact opposite result.
Exactly.
Even though technically that's the same thing.
Part
right?
of what we have to do here is look at Microsoft's motives. Microsoft and News Corp, I would argue, have pretty much given up on the ad business. And they're pulling the ladder up after them. And they're trying to turn this into an advantage. They've been bad at selling ads. Right? News Corp has gone behind a paywall. Right.
Since we
Microsoft can't do media,
screw everybody else.
And let's also make it seem as if this is a benefit we're giving you.
So you think Microsoft's pushing this notion that tracking cookies are bad?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
I think, you know, go ask our chat room, because I get an argument every time I say what I just said. They say, no, they're spying on us. What do you say, Kevin? The voice of reason, ladies and gentlemen. Jeff and I are kind of polar opposites.
Yes, yes.
Not exactly.
You could be reasonable if you try.
No, it's complicated. I mean, that's the thing. There's a whole bunch of this stuff that the thing that's actually surprising to me is how big the web pages are. My machine was slowing down the other day. I noticed the memory was full, so I killed the biggest processes, which happened to be Chrome browser processes, and I had 250 megs of RAM used up for one TechCrunch page.
Oh, please. What is all that memory for?
Because there's so much cruft, you know, right, on there for all the different advertising and tracking bits and pieces and embedded other bits of sites and blah, blah, blah going on. There is something very odd when the average web page is bigger than a bitmap of it in memory. That's just weird.
I think that's right, and I think it was a discipline we all had to learn when we made web pages early on. I remember early in my days of running sites, the pages got bigger and bigger and bigger, and the traffic went down and down and down. And now with speed being what it is, you lose a discipline. So I agree.
Isn't it like putting an ad blocker into a browser and turning it on by default?
Yeah. Exactly what it is.
A little bit like that, yeah.
Because the ads become worthless.
There is an issue on that. And I think this is also a dirty little secret is that ad customization doesn't work. That look what happens on Facebook,
where there is a level about you,
and it's the ads are complete crap.
Well, that's because that's a sales problem.
Well, I think you make the case that advertisers want tracking cookies, but not because it actually helps them.
Put it another way, Leo, is just having. I'm dealing with one site I know that is local, and it has a lot of out of market traffic.
Right.
So I asked him, I said, well, what's the differential in value here?
It's huge, right?
It's 25 times.
Yep. And it's the same reason Clear Channel blocks international listeners on its radio streams. They can't monetize them, and they consume resources.
So that's simple. You know, you start with, well, I said it at Dreamforce yesterday that to hell with big data, what media needs right now is small data. They need to start with the first knowledge about you. Are you part of their audience or not? And that's tracking. Right. That says I've set a cookie that says I know where you live so that I can give you local content and local advertising and benefit from it.
Isn't it legitimate also to have a concern that these tracking cookies are used in much more nefarious ways?
Open your mouth. Let's see the transmitter. No. I mean, what nefarious? It's like argument over
Street View. The chat room just said they're aggregating data about my web use over many years and I don't know what the end ..
The tricky bit is that when you're using an ad network that works on more than one site, then it's tracking your behavior across sites.
Right.
That is the thing that makes people slightly nervous, because you've embedded iframe that's got the ad in it.
That's the third-party cookie issue.
And so there's a third-party
cookie. But it's also anonymized. It's anonymized.
Yeah, but it does. I mean, who cares if it's anonymized, because they know enough about me that they don't need my name. That's the least of it.
But again.
Right.
All right. So imagine the dark room where they're using all this data.
Yeah.
Have you heard of a single case? A single case?
Well, I'll give you the one that's the canonical case. The insurance company who, through aggregated data, realizes I eat a lot of Tim Hortons and Dunkin' Donuts and refuses me insurance.
But no. Wait. They can't do that from cookies because it doesn't tie to your name.
Oh, but that's easy enough, because it's not really anonymous, because one site I logged into and that information was shared with Overture.
That data is then not tracked with the rest of the data. So when a double click cookie comes along, it's not tying to Axiom in that data. It has the data of certain, you know, online web behavior, but it doesn't tie to your name.
Okay. So why does Google capitulate then and turn
because
on?
They had agreed to be part of a standard. And the standard you referenced to, so they were not going to have it at all,
right?
Right, yeah. And I would actually support that, but they put it in there, and I also support that. It's a choice, fine, and I suspect they'll bury the choice, which is fine.
And here's what happens from now on, or in a year or so, every time you go to somewhere like Boing Boing, it's going to say, "Ah, I see you're not using tracking cookies. I'm sorry, you can't read this site."
I wish someone would. I wish they'd say there's a price to doing what they do. Now, some people will say, "Okay, fine, charge me." Yeah, but how well that works. It's very expensive.
You can't, and people won't pay.
No, they won't pay. But I think some sites should say this is the condition. And in fact, Leo, it happens. If you go to the New York Times users data, you are required to accept cookies. It is a requirement to use the site because if not, you can't use it.
I am starting to see that. You don't use cookies, you can't use our site. They don't mention the tracking cookies.
But it's really not because they're trying to track you. It's because that's the way the web operates. They need that to operate. The New York Times needs it to be able to handle the registration structure.
Right. And when, you know, the other case for this, and this is something that we've been showing off a lot at Dreamforce, is helping companies get in touch with their customers. So, you know, one of the things that, you know, we do customer relationship management, so that is companies keeping records of you so that they know what you bought and what you're trying to buy, and when you make a complaint, they can talk back to you. And
they're tracking me!
We're tracking you, yeah. We've got a giant database full of you
as
customers for other people. Part of what we're trying to do with this stuff at the moment is actually, when you complain about something on Twitter, help them actually connect that back to a customer record so that they can say, oh, yeah, you did get the bad one. Here's a better one or whatever. So there's a lot of stuff with this. And like any other tool, it's like, are you using this to do good or to do harm? And part of the, you know, the point of the other thing, you know, the big push we've had here has been business is social. You need to be out on the social networks, paying attention to your customers, part of this world where this is going on. And you need to not behave like a dick there. You need to actually go out there and, you know, be good to your customers and not do bad things. And when they complain about you, don't bitch at them. And, you know, this seems like obvious stuff, but it's very new to a lot of companies that they can have that direct relationship, and that also in the same thing of remarks in a private room can go public. So people could you know, if you misbehave, that can spread around the web too.
So here's
the big punch of big bunch of this is providing some tools to do this, but at the same time explain to people that you should behave, you know, in a way that relates well to your customers with this stuff, not use it as a way to attack them.
Well, and that is the key point. And I talked about that yesterday at Dreamforce, where our business should be about relationships and delivering value in return for that. And the example I've used in the show before is people in Germany, even Germany doesn't complain about Google Priority Inbox because they get value back. And just asking somebody for their name as a condition of coming in, or their phone number or whatever, yeah, that I wouldn't do it either. I don't like it either. But if I get value back, Google knowing where I am so it can give me targeted information is a perfect structure. We did screw that up in our industry, that we didn't explain that well enough.
Well, yeah, well, it's done. And unfortunately, what if, now I know we can try to fight the good fight and convince people otherwise, but what if people actually finally just say, no, and don't track us? That ad model collapses.
Then I think I really think it's a nuclear winter. I think you get to the point where it's going.
There's going to be some solution.
There's some solution.
We don't need tracking cookies.
The ad model is also collapsing because of mobile,
right?
And that's happening faster,
right?
The stuff I was getting from these guys was Matt Hawley said that Metafilter had gone. You know, you can see it going up incrementally. It's over 30% mobile readers now. It's going to go across 50% this year.
So we've got two. We've got pressure from two sides now.
Yes. So
yes, we do. Yeah.
We need other ways to support these things.
Well, what happens is, and the chat room is excoriating me for good reason. I'll confess, I went a little strong there. But what does happen here, unquestionably, is if the ad support for media goes away, then you will have less content or more paywalls. You'll just have to.
But I think paywalls don't work in some cases.
They don't. They don't because of scarcity and abundance and all that. Now, what I would argue, the way that I've been arguing media ought to go, is to build relationships with people. But that relationship requires knowing you and knowing something about you and being able to act positively on that. I think that the problem I have is not that individuals will turn on do not track choices or will use ad blockers. It's going to be small numbers. The problem is things like what Microsoft is doing and what the EU is doing and making it the default.
We've been able to safely ignore ad blockers because it's such a tiny percentage. Now, unfortunately, it hits tech sites where tech literate people are disproportionately. Yes. It's why 4chan doesn't make money, frankly, or Metafilter or any of these. And it's a problem on Boing Boing because they have a literate audience. Mm-hmm. And so now, fortunately, the Boing Boing audience you probably can talk to.
Except
in a way that you can't probably do a 4chan audience.
But they're those people are turning on ad blockers by default to all sites they go to.
And then that's the problem, is that if Do Not Track becomes the default, even if it's a, you know, it, and this is why I'm sure that the standards body said, no, it can't be a default. It has to be unset is the default. If it becomes the default, most people, not knowing what they're setting, will just choose it.
Well, the other model is you, Leo. The other model is...
And that's what I'm saying is that people are going to have to find other... I'm fortunate. I stumbled into this model. It wasn't that I thought 7 years ago, oh, we're going to have problems with privacy and tracking cookies, mm-hmm. so I better have a model. I did know the paywall was going to work because we tried it.
Right. Right.
So we figured out a way of doing niche broadcasting. We know our audience only because we're such a narrow niche.
And you can't get over the ad. You could fast forward, but the truth is...
Oh, people fast forward the ads all the time.
But they know, but see, even so, people know that Stamps.com, for example, and Ford are sponsors of this show.
We do everything we can to make sure they
heard
know
it a lot,
that.
Right? And so when those companies go out and see the effectiveness of their advertising and are they getting unaided recall... from their consumers. I'm betting everything that they're fine. People know this.
But frankly, these are personalized ads. We just don't have to do tracking cookies. We just know what the audience, we know our audience. I mean, but that's lucky. I mean, that's pure luck, which is why I'm interested in this because we serve, and we are doing banner ads now, which I think will be impacted by this, right?
Mm-hmm. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. You may get remnant ads because they don't know who to target.
Right.
Certainly, banner ads are strongly targeted.
Well, we sell them direct, so they're not.
Okay, so that's different.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. These are all. In fact, the banner ads tend to be from the same people who are buying.
And by the way, that's the third thing. Remnant ads are a terrible experience, right?
Yeah,
the dancing
wants
monkey
those.
Ads. We don't want those.
That's why when I go to Boing Boing and look at Boing Boing,
the payment for them is going down as well.
It looks like, frankly, it doesn't look like ads that are targeted to a Boing Boing audience. It looks like ads that are remnant ads.
Yeah.
Maybe they aren't, but socks. eBay.
Well, the eBay is probably just a throw in there.
Well, don't they use
they're using
Federated
FM?
FM.
Well, Federated. You see, I was in Federated for a while, and they're smart,
I guess
good people.
These are tailored.
But what Federated needed was volume.
Good watches and home decor. That's
That's all appropriate. Game Edgeworld of the game. They're doing ads in the stream as well, as you can see.
And chewing tobacco or something.
Chewing tobacco, really?
No, really.
Snuff.
No.
Well, that's because they have a younger audience. That's
you wouldn't run a snuff ad.
No, I would not.
Maybe it's a steampunk thing. You know, I can see snuff and.
No, it's because they have a young audience, and it's hard if you're a snuff. Put yourself in the shoes of the snuff manufacturers.
Yeah.
It's not an easy audience to get to because they're not watching TV.
The other thing, Kevin,
they
brought
come to
earlier.
Us all the time.
Your snuff boxes.
Well,
all over
no,
here.
We're going to do that because what I'm going to do is you'll never see an ad for snuff, but you'll notice as people walk around the studio, they all have little round cans in their pockets. It's a very subtle form of advertising. We're going to
and they're snorfling
and they're going.
the other impact of this, Kevin mentioned, is that in the EU you're starting to see sites where it's giving you that tick box, and they haven't even gotten into the full regulations that Vivian Reding is proposing. That will really become irritating, where you'll constantly see this need to say, okay. What's the evil of all of this? I don't know.
Here's a chart. This must be from you. You like infographics. It says on Extreme Tech, the technological death match. Amazon,
it
Apple.
It actually was kind of an interesting one, yeah.
And Google and Microsoft face off.
This chart and then the one on the next page.
So these are the products.
This is 2007.
January 2007.
Of who was in what business.
It was Apple was in phone, Mac, iTunes, movies, music, browser, OS, and iOS. And Microsoft was in a few of those. Google was in none of
those. Fascinating how little Google was at that time.
Now, and that's all changed, of course.
Go down to the next page. No, you got to go to the next silly page.
Next page. Got to get some more ad loads here.
We do.
They were kind of in movies.
Were they in movies back then? Now, look, it's all green.
They were trying with Google Video. They just weren't doing very well. Good job of it.
Phone, they got the Nexus. The tablet, they got the Nexus 7. The computer, they've got Chromebooks. Books, they've got Play, the movies and Play and music and Play and browser and Chrome and OS. Yeah, look at that.
It's pretty amazing.
But is that testimony to the brilliance of Apple 5 years ago and everybody's following along?
The argument in this piece is that it is because of mobile. That mobile brought all of this on. That with mobile, you have to have these things.
Right.
Mobile changes a lot, doesn't it? We're seeing it's changing the ad model, the success of... Success of these companies is really hanging by a thread because of mobile. It changes the business that you're in.
Yep.
Who is the winner? If you presume that, is Google the winner? And Apple's the winner only because they made the early mobile platform that dominated.
But Apple
doesn't continue
really
to hold that.
Apple has a structure to sell you stuff. Google has a structure to give you ads.
So you know what's missing in that thing is maps.
Yes, which is really important because one of the stories in here is that Amazon is going back into maps.
Let's talk about maps. Yes. We're going to take a break and we're going to talk about maps because iOS 6 came out today and already I'm hearing the noise about the maps. We'll talk about that in just a second. But first, a word from Ford. You see, we have ads. Thank God. Thank you, Lord. I got a mortgage on this studio. I got to pay. Social.ford.com. Ford has a great social website designed for Ford lovers, Ford owners. There's something about Ford. I don't know. I guess this, maybe it's true for other manufacturers. I don't know. But there's something about Ford. I know this because I'm a Mustang owner. Where you just, you got this, this becomes kind of part of your life. And if you're that kind of person, if you're a Ford family, you got to visit social.ford.com. It's a site for you. First of all, a lot of Ford news. For instance, they just announced today the new Fusions. The first 47 car, 47 miles per gallon, highway, city, and combined. The new Fusion, there'll be a plug-in hybrid, a regular hybrid. I cannot wait. But so that's the kind of information you'll get. But you also have articles on a lot of other subjects. You see all the subjects here, including technology. I have a little article in here, an interview I did with Jim Buczkowski. He's one of their lead technologists. But you can read. I mean, it's really fun to read about the Ford technology story. This is a company that has, you know, one of the original industrial giants in the U.S. that has embraced consumer electronics and technology in everything they do. Images and videos from Ford owners. Great ideas, too. This is their suggestion box. Your ideas, and you can vote on others' suggestions. Post your own ideas. Grab a badge while you're in there. Social.ford.com. It's a new site for Ford owners and wannabe Ford owners. And do check out that new Fusion. It'll be at a Ford dealer near you soon. I just sent a note to Lisa saying, can I trade in my Mustang? I really want this new Fusion. This plug-in hybrid looks really... I really want. Social.ford.com. I have a little bit of a problem.
Want the latest thing.
I have a car, Jones.
Did you buy this one or lease this one?
The Mustang I bought. I own it outright.
Yeah.
So I could trade it in.
You trade it in, yeah.
Lisa won't let me. She wants it.
Oh, well, fine.
It's a V8. So, she says, no.
No. Hand me down.
It's a company car, so she could drive it.
Oh.
She could drive it. Let's talk about... what was it? It was something exciting and new and different, and you started this. And I can't remember now
Maps.
What it is.
Maps! Kevin started it.
Maps!
He starts all these
iOS 6 dumps Google Maps! And already, a few of the tame press, and Apple really has its tame press corps, are saying how great Maps is. Almost everybody else is saying, oh, no. This is a big loss for Apple. First of all, why does Apple dump Google Maps?
Well, it's more complicated than that. The thing is that the old Maps app was written by Apple using Google's API.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, so that was not a Google app.
I think to be really clear, it wasn't a Google app. And this is why...
Is that true of the YouTube app as well? It was an Apple app?
That's true of the YouTube app as well. They were Apple app, and they were done in the sort of early days of iOS before anybody else had the SDK. Remember, it shipped with these.
Right.
And when Eric was on the board, and there was a partnership going on.
Got it.
And the thing is, those apps have not been touched much since. You know.
Right.
They didn't pick up all the features that Google Maps has got since.
Like turn by turn.
Like turn by turn, like bicycle turn by turn, which is my new favorite.
Transit directions. But why couldn't they? Why couldn't they?
They could. They just didn't. They decided not to work with Google in that way anymore. Now, they had a huge fight previously. This was 2009, maybe, where they blocked Google from putting apps in the store. They wouldn't let Google put in Latitude.
Right. Or Google Voice.
A Google Voice, and the FCC had a poke at them, and there was a whole bunch of disclosure about that.
Yes. Remember, they asked for a letter from Apple? What the hell?
Yeah.
And you know, Vic Gundotra was a huge fan of iOS and wanted to ship lots of apps on that. And after that, Apple refused to put their stores. They were like, well, okay, we're going to do Android first for everything, and we'll do iOS as needed, but only if Apple will let us do it. And so they didn't because of that spat. What has happened is that the iOS Maps app has been not keeping up with the Android one. You know, anyone who's used both, that's obvious. There are a lot of iOS-only people who
So now we've got an Apple-created version where they've replaced Google Maps with maps they've licensed from, I think it's TomTom.
TomTom only, and that's part of the problem, is TomTom's just getting into this business.
And OpenStreetMap as well, I think. They've got a mixture of stuff in there. It is not as mature as the maps that Google Maps has got.
And it's missing transit, it's missing bikes, it's missing street view.
But that's what Kevin's speaking to, is the value of having, this goes back to tracking, right? Okay, if I can't track you, at least I can know where you're going, where you are, where you live, where you go every day, what you look for, and that has huge value coming forward.
It's an enormous thing. It's useful, yeah. And it's
so are you saying this is an information grab by Apple
and Amazon? Amazon too is going to start its own maps.
Amazon has licensed Nokia maps. By the way, the Nokia maps are quite good. They're kind of the underdog. People don't know about them, but Nokia there's a Navtech and Telenav, and I think they bought Navtech, right?
I think so.
One of the two big mapping companies, bigger than TomTom. TomTom's only now getting into that business. So Nokia has great data. They've been working on this for some time. They've got great software. So Amazon's licensing, and it has an API.
Right. So you're right. It's an information grab, but it's also
Amazon would want to do that is so that they could. We just lost Kevin. We'll get him back. Is so that they can track you,
not just track you, but
to know where you are and serve you ads that are
right. Don't forget what Amazon's going to do, and this is part of the story too.
This is what everybody's trying to do with local. Yes. I mean mobile. Yes, they're saying, mobile. Well, okay,
it tells you something.
If you're
going
to be mobile, we're going to lose all this revenue because you're going mobile. What can we do to monetize? We know where you are.
Here's the other thing with Amazon. Amazon is going to, right now in California, it's going to start charging sales tax. In New Jersey, it's going to do the same. And so what they're saying is it's going to differentiate itself by same-day delivery, by fast delivery.
Right.
Well, knowing where you are when you order something, being able to enable that to get you something to you wherever you are is going to be a differentiator. And maps are going to tell you that.
So it is a grab.
Yeah.
A data grab.
Yeah.
But I don't want to get back in this tracking cookies thing. But that's the point, isn't it? Is that ultimately, unless people could find another way to make money.
Right. Right.
I don't know, making shoes.
Well, one of the odd things going on in media is events, right? And The Economist and the FT and local blogs like Brooklyn Brownstoner make their living out of having events. And that's another way to do this now, and it's not a very good way.
Amazon Events or Google Events is
not going to work, right?
No. But for something like 4chan or
Twit.
Yeah, I mean, TechCrunch does very well on events. Everybody says, why don't you do events?
You could go to New York and hold an event. And you probably wouldn't do this knowing you because you're just too
gushy.
But you probably wouldn't charge. But you could charge the door. You could pay for the trip.
Revision 3, everybody's told me we should do this. But someday maybe.
You can, in the summer, you can come and you can use my campus.
Okay.
All right?
Okay. Okay.
Make him come to New York.
Okay, so, TechCrunch, speaking of TechCrunch, says, if I were Google, this is Drew Olenoff, I love Drew, I wouldn't release a map app for 6 months. Google has already released a YouTube app. They've already responded. They said, okay, fine, you're going to take out YouTube. That was a crappy app. Anyway, the new YouTube app is much, much better.
Right,
it's modern, uses
very
the
Google
API.
Plus-y.
I have to think that somebody at the Googleplex is currently, right now, writing a better maps app for iOS. That would probably be better, but what Drew is saying is let Google be a little bit petulant. Say, all right, you don't want to work with us. This is a quote. He says, let consumers experience what a really bad map experience is like. Let them get angry at their beloved Apple. Let Apple explain why their map app isn't up to snuff yet and that it takes time and talent to make something absolutely wonderful. Let the consumers ask Apple why they kicked the experience. But see, I think this is missing the boat because I don't think that's really what happened. It was just time.
Yeah.
And Google wasn't cooperating after the snafu. And Apple said, look, we got to do this. Maybe it's going to be it's going to be suboptimal. I don't think it's bad, but I think it's going to be suboptimal for, say, a few months, a year. I don't know how long it'll take. But at some point, won't they be as good as Google Maps?
I don't know. Look at what Google is investing in maps. It's a lot.
Well, in fact, it was really interesting because the New York Times had an article about Google's back end the week before this happened.
Yeah, right.
It was clearly placed by Google. Right. Saying, hey, you know, you really should do an article on how hard we work on maps because they're really good and there's a reason why, and Apple can't do this.
And the other thing, data grab, as you said, is one thing Marissa Meyer always bragged about was how many data points had been added to their maps.
It's not just use. Yes. That Google's been collecting this data and using this data for years. Exactly. There's a lot of massaging going on behind the scenes.
And even Street View, which we should mention, did a wonderful thing right here in this very place.
I'll show you that. That's my tool of
the week. Oh, sorry. Okay. All right. So Street View collects data in other ways too. Now I don't actually use Street View that much. I don't use the pictures, but it's there as another source of data that Google is
invested
in. You know,
Dvorak always says he loves it because when he arrives using Google Maps, he has a picture of the building and says, "This is where you're going."
He's an old guy. He needs that.
You know, I don't use that feature, but
I trust address. I know.
Okay, we're still getting Kevin. Kevin back on here. I haven't used iOS 6 yet. I haven't used the maps yet. I'll try it when I get home tonight. And so I think the jury's still out. People got to drive around a lot and try it. But there's definitely things missing.
Mm-hmm.
And it is going to hurt, I think, a little bit. Unless you're the problem is most people who use iOS use it exclusively. Yeah. So they don't have. I mean, we're unusual. They don't have an experience of what they might be missing.
You know what's happened to me, Leo, is the Nexus 7. Is what drives me to go ahead and switch my phone to Android.
Interesting.
Because
interesting.
I'm getting an experience here that the iPhone to me is clumsy now. And it doesn't have the integrated experience with the Google apps that I use regularly. I use Docs, or pardon me, Drive. I use Gmail. I use all this stuff and Maps. So being stuck by Amazon or Apple, either one, to have to use their stuff and not be able to use the things I actually use, this is spoiling me. This is a kind of lost leader for me to drive me into Android more.
That's interesting.
But I'm weird. I don't know.
I think you might. I think a lot of people bought that 7 because it was so cheap. That's another reason why Google should just give it away because
it's a
Trojan horse.
Yeah, it really is.
Google Plus. Okay, I'm just going to get in trouble. I'm going to say it, but go ahead. Google Plus has 400 million registered users, 100 million monthly active users.
Hi there.
Hey, Kevin Marks. Welcome back. Changed the subject. We were talking about maps. Sorry we missed your input there, but...
Now he's on a Google Plus.
Time waits for no man.
So now he's going to get in trouble.
Or Marks.
One more thing that ties back to the other fuss about alternative Android versions. So part of the
We could talk about the Alibaba story.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
I think this,
or
this,
IU
this
or
connected.
Whatever it was. Okay.
So
just to give you an update, I think most people know the story, but Google said to a it was Acer, right? Who was it? Oh, now I got to find it. The Ali Yun OS, which was a highly hacked Android. Google said that is not going to be Android. It's not Android enough. It's incompatible. So we're not going to countenance it.
Well, you can do it if you want to, but then
you ain't getting Google apps and you're not in the Android Open Handset Alliance. You're not an official
certified
Android, and they canceled the phone. But the company itself, Alibaba, said, "We respect and understand our partner's decision to postpone the introduction of the phone. We're dismayed by the impact this dispute has had on our partner." They're talking about Acer. Alibaba is a Chinese company. Acer officials said that Acer will continue to communicate with Google. It still wants to launch the phone.
Does this have anything to do, too, that it's in China and there are things that the Chinese government, for example, wants to put on phones?
A lot of people say Google's evil in not allowing this.
No, Google's allowing it. You can do it. They're just saying that.
We won't put it Android on it. You can't put Android on it.
Yeah.
So there's the setup, Kevin. Go ahead.
So part of the point of this is Google uses Android to refer to two things at once, which is really confusing. It's the open source project. That is the core thing that you can build the phones on, run all that. And then there's a bunch of apps which you only get if you pay up for the rights to put with Google on your phone.
So as an example, I have here the Kindle Fire HD. That's running on an Android base, but it doesn't say Android. It doesn't have any Google apps. It's not approved official Android.
Right. But you can't use the Android logo unless you do that with Google.
But Google didn't say to Amazon, you can't do that. No, it's part of Open Handset Alliance. It's allowed to do that. It's open source software.
Right.
Right. So, I wrote about this way back in January 2011, explaining that there are these two parts and expecting he would have started building a replacement for the with Google Pods. And Amazon was the first one to do it, well, the second one after Barnes & Noble. They built a sort of a suite of apps that runs on top of Android that replaces those Google apps. And they haven't replaced all of them yet. You know, there are some missing. They don't have a great email client. And they didn't have maps. And so Amazon this week announced that they're starting to make maps for their devices too. So that's interesting. What I expected was to see more of these, and I think some of these Chinese ones are like that. They take the Android operating system, but they put their own apps on top of it that are part of the experience. Now, Jeff, you said before that you think that the Google ecosystem is a big part of the Android experience and part of the reason you want it.
Yes.
And that's been broadly true. And so when you get a phone that's missing those, you feel like you've got bits missing.
So, I mean, Amazon's not a member of the Open Handset Alliance, so there's no stick right. with which to punish them.
I mean, I wonder whether Google regrets making it open source, but I think that there's other advantages to them. Correct me if I'm wrong here, Kevin. At some point, they do want more people developing on the platform. If there are apps that run on Android, even on rogue Android installations, it helps the Android ecosystem.
Here's what Andy Rubin, who's in charge of Android at Google, said on Google Plus. We agree that the Alion OS is not part of the Android ecosystem, and you are under no requirement to be compatible. However, the fact is Alion uses the Android runtime framework and tools, and your app store contains Android apps, including pirated Google apps. So there's really no disputing that Alion is based on the Android platform and takes advantage of all the hard work that's gone into the platform by the Open Handset Alliance. If you want to benefit from the Android ecosystem, then make the choice to be compatible. It's easy, free, we'll even help you out. But if you don't want to be compatible, then don't expect help from the OHA members that are working to support and build a unified Android ecosystem.
Right.
That seems fair.
I think so. I think it
is. I think this is it. But the confusion about those two different levels of Android is partly of Google's own making. Last year at Dreamforce, Mark Benioff interviewed Eric Schmidt about this, and Schmidt was very explicit, was that was this apps bundle and the store and all those things was the carrot they used to keep these people in line. He was basically saying that. He's saying this is our way to keep this system converged. And there are ones that are built on Android that aren't doing that. I mean,
Amazon. Amazon's not a member of OHA, and Google's never said word one about that. That's fine.
Right.
But if you're going to be a member of OHA, as Acer is, then you have to abide by those rules. That seems sensible.
Not to go back too far, but is that a model for Twitter in a way? Could Twitter have been built in a similar way to say, all right, there's part of this stuff here.
Wouldn't that have been great?
Wouldn't it have been great? They said, okay, yeah.
Interesting Maybe. Idea.
They'd never.
Is there precedent in the open source world for anything like this before? I mean, is that how, I don't know, Java's managed? Is anything managed like this, Kevin?
Somewhat. Yeah, Java's a bit like this.
MySQL's like this, right?
Like that. But yeah. what they have there is they tend to have one license. They do dual license, and they have extra rights over it that other people don't have. Everyone else gets GPL. They get to do other things too.
You prevent incompatible forks from kind of polluting the stream.
Right.
Right.
But they're still available. You know, when Oracle took over MySQL, it's now been forked two or three times, and significantly. There are significant working forks of MySQL that behave differently. So and have different maintainers, and that was because they weren't happy with Oracle's stewardship of it. So that ability was still there. We haven't seen as much of that with Android. Partly because it's modular, but I don't. You know, it's not clear how different Amazon's version is. It certainly runs apps that are built for that version of Android. I haven't had any ones to test stuff on yet.
Can tell it's Android if you look at the settings and so forth, but it's not.
And you can install Android APKs on it.
You can. In fact, there's even the checkbox that says, are you going to allow installing of third-party apps? So it's very compatible, right? More so probably than this Alion was.
Right.
I don't know.
So, but that was it. So part of the part of the rules for getting the with Google is there's a list of compliance stuff you have to do that defines a release of Android. There's a compatibility definition document, right?
Right.
And they have different, they define a different one for each one. And so that says that the device has to have certain characteristics for it to be classified as an Android of that iteration. So the Android 1.6 definition required it to be a phone. It had to have telephone APIs. Android 2.1 didn't say that, but it did say you have to have a camera. So there was a set of rules like that.
Oh, interesting.
That they said you can't be conformant unless you have these things, because they're trying to converge the platform so that you can write an app and you know that the phone stuff will be there, or you know that the camera will be there.
There's so much to talk about today. I got so many more things. We started talking about Google Plus, 400 million signups.
Right. Yeah, you were going to be a smart ass, weren't you?
Yeah, but I won't now. I'll be nice.
Go ahead, say it.
There's no time to be snarky. And 100 million active users. It seems to me there's four people on there, but I could be wrong.
And they're all mad at you right now.
They all hate me. Yeah. But I said the same thing about Buzz, and boy, and everybody on Buzz said, no, Buzz is alive and vital, and then that was it. So, you know, Google Plus will never go away, because Google is basically saying, no, there's no such thing as Google Plus. It's Google, period. And right. When you sign up for Google, you just that's part of it.
Drew wrote a good piece that it's the socialization of Google as a whole.
Yeah. And I think that's true. But it's not a place people are. It's not a destination.
It doesn't really want to be. But it is. I'm telling you, it's the best conversations I have.
I'm not denying that. I think Google's misinforming when they're talking about all these numbers, because it's not like there's 400 million people, you know, or even 100. They say 100 million visit every month. I don't know where they're visiting. But it doesn't.
Yeah, it's.
I'm sorry. It's like that's not what's going on there.
Visits to the Google.
It's not a destination.
Are always a ridiculous number because people encounter Google all over.
It's not.
And I think that's what Google's goal here is to get it embedded all over.
And as long as we're talking about misrepresenting, there were all the articles that Google threatening. You know, The Verge said Acer cancels phone launch in response to threats from Google. It's really easy to write a headline that really misrepresents the thrust of what's going on.
They're schmucks, my colleagues. Yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's misrepresenting it to say that the Google Plus is a social network. It's Google.
It's Google, exactly. Well said, Leo.
Not a destination. Well, it's well just said. Google. Samsung responding to the iPhone 5 with a new ad. Inflammatory is the word.
It's a little strong.
It's not inflammatory. No. It's just an ad saying this is what they do, this is what we do. The irony, actually, if you look at the Samsung Galaxy 3 ad, because it's basically spec sheet head-to-head. And I use a Galaxy 3, and I have no idea what three-quarters of these terms.
It's like a shampoo. The only shampoo with...
A smart stay. It could be. That could be in a shampoo.
It could be. Right.
Galaxy S3 now with Smart Stay, S-Beam, ShareShot, GroupCast, Direct Call, Smart Alert, Tilt-to-Zoom, Palm Swipe Capture, Palm
Touch. That sounds
touch
dirty,
mute
by the way.
I know what half of these are, but come on. That doesn't really...
Well, as an ad, it's ridiculous because don't use them, you don't know what they are.
Right. The next big thing's already here. It's a bad... You know what? It's a bad ad.
Yeah.
Although it's kind of, okay, this is inflammatory. It doesn't take a genius. That's a little inflammatory.
Fine. So they should be. Yeah.
Because that's trolling their bad genius ads.
Yeah. It doesn't take a genius to use our phone. Hey, if you see Will Ferrell, Owen Wilson, or Vince Vaughn wandering around the Googleplex, that's because they're wandering around the Googleplex. They're filming a new movie there.
It should be funny.
Internship. You know, I give up on should be funny. After seeing the campaign, which should have been funny.
Yeah, there's a lot of those.
In every respect, it should have been funny. I don't know what's wrong with the movie
it's
industry.
It's true of Will Ferrell movies, especially.
Yeah, they should be funny.
But they're not.
Often they're not. Not always.
No.
Anchorman 2, I'm sure, will be a laugh riot. Back to the mines we go. They should just call it Back to the Mine. And apparently...
So the plot is that they're middle-aged or nearly, and they've lost their jobs, so they become interns at Google. Like there's any chance that would happen, but what the hell?
BJ Novak's in it also from The Office. John Goodman.
That'd be good.
I bet you John Goodman will play the role of Larry Page.
Well, who would play Larry Page? Yes.
I think here's, we haven't seen Larry in a while. He lost his voice. I think here's the plot point. He's actually been in hiding eating ho-hos, and he's gained 400 pounds, and he looks like John Goodman.
I like that.
See, I should be writing this movie. Vince Vaughn is writing it. Vince is very funny.
No, it's amazing that I actually wanted to do a sitcom. Unfortunately, I don't have the talent to do it around kind of startup world. We haven't seen it. You know, the closest we have, of course, is Big Bang Theory.
And then there's the reality show that Mark Zuckerberg's sister Randy is doing.
Right. And there is the Shark Tank, which I think is really quite amazing.
Shark Tank is actually great. Yeah.
But it's a funny world. Right, Google is filled with funny people.
No, it's not.
I saw an absolutely brilliant movie at the weekend.
What'd you see?
Indie Game the movie. Have you seen that?
No. What's it about?
Oh, it's a documentary about independent game developers.
Now that I'd like to see.
Get it? It's up on their site, indiegamethemovie.com. That you can buy it directly from them. You can also buy it from iTunes and stuff. And it was completely beautifully done. It gets the experience of programming and building things and the pressures of releasing it and what that feels like. It's a beautiful piece of work. There's a trailer up on YouTube. You can probably see it there.
$10. Now, see, this is a good model.
Yes. Yeah.
And they also Kickstarter funded the production of it. They also then had a separate Kickstarter to put it into theatrical distribution, which they did themselves. They went to Sundance and won, and they turned down the distribution deals they were getting because they were going to take too long. And they did a tour of tours in the U.S. on themselves by calling up cinemas and booking them and then telling people to go and see it. And they're selling it online through this.
This is great.
I think the same thing happened, by the way, with This American Life has a movie out right now, and they got they mobilized their audience to demand that go into theaters. You know, we want our MTV.
No, forget the theater. Charge $10.
Exactly.
Watch it on the web. You own it forever. Stream it anytime. Yep. Download any format. $10. It's cheaper than going to a movie, and you own it. I think this is great. I think every movie should do this.
Yep.
Forget it. Yep. No, just forget it. Just do this from now on. Everybody's got a home theater. They can watch it on a nice screen. Not everybody, but many.
Yeah, no, you get the 1080p. It looks fine.
It's awesome. Great idea. I think it's the future. Now, it's good they didn't distribute the Muhammad movie that
and
way.
It's a brilliant film as well. It was really moving. Not a
brilliant film, this Muhammad film clip. Was Google right? The White House. By the way, this is where the Muslim rage is coming from.
Right.
Is this really bizarre, poorly dubbed,
cheesy can be.
Movie, which everybody agrees is stupid. However, highly offensive to some Muslims. The White House requested Google pull it down. YouTube said no.
Yep.
Were they right?
I think so. They did pull it down in Libya and Egypt, and I think one or two other countries after that.
Indonesia.
I don't like that precedent at all. I think it puts Google in a very bad position. I'm sure they don't like it either because the next time they don't take something down, they're going to say, well, you took that down.
Well, they were saying, okay, we took it down responding to local law as opposed to political pressure.
No, that's not really the case. I don't think they were demanding. I think they took it down because of the pressure of what was happening. And they kind of said that.
They said we restricted access to it where it's illegal. India, Indonesia, Libya, and Egypt. Wait a minute. No, I'm sorry. I parsed that wrong. We restricted access to it in countries where it is illegal, such as India and Indonesia, as well as in Libya and Egypt, given the very sensitive situations.
Right. So they did it there. It was for understandable reasons, but it does set a precedent, and it puts them in a difficult position. And I'm glad to see how many people have stood up for Google here and said that we don't want them to be the censor and the nanny. I've had a lot of discussions about this online where people are saying, well, but you shouldn't take it down. Isn't it irresponsible? Well, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that if I don't like speech and I riot over that speech, I then censor that speech in the future because then things like this will happen. You can't get into that trap.
It's very difficult, isn't it?
And I just saw that in France, something just happened. A Charlie Hebdo, I think the magazine is called, a satire magazine, put up some cartoons of Muhammad.
Oh, boy.
So there we go again. So the French government is asking them to take them down. And the problem here is not the speech. The problem here is people trying to stop speech.
Right. So the other thing, Salman Rushdie's biography came out this week.
Yep.
And there was a very good Start the Week on Radio 4 interview with him and talking about it and what happened and what it meant and the things that, you know, things he tried to do. And that was, you know.
And not only is the fatwa still out on him, but they've increased the reward now, or somebody offered a greater amount of money for him.
The thing that he said now is that publishers wouldn't touch the book, a book that did that, because the censorship is now happening.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's most worrying. It's not, you know, that he's obviously worried about people trying to kill him, but he's very worried about the fact that freedom to publish is not there.
Sometimes I despair.
And we do have YouTube and Kickstarter and so things, so we can publish things too.
That's why I was so happy, honestly, with hashtag Muslim Rage and hashtag Jesus Wife, because it shows there's a lot of reasonable people in the world, and we can
Many
talk
of whom
about
are
this.
Muslims and Christians.
Amen, brother. Exactly.
Wow. I just hope that we don't blow the place up before we figure this all out.
Yeah.
I think that's anything else we want to hit. Boy, there's so many stories. I don't want to miss any biggies, but I think we got the Vince Vaughn, Owen Wilson, Will Ferrell story, and that was the only one I really cared about. Google Fiber adding Turner channels,
so it's expanding.
That's what was it? It was 90% of all the city, all the areas in Kansas City that could get Google Fiber did in fact raise enough.
Sign up. Yep.
Wow.
Yep. Which is great.
That's so great.
It really is.
And I only wish we had it here.
Yeah.
All right. I think we're going to go to our tips and picks.
Okay.
You know, I don't know if we're going to get Kevin Marks back, but if we don't, he just gave us a pretty good pick. Indie game. What was it? Indie game. Oh, no, I've lost it.
I-N-D-I-E
game. Indie, I-N-D-I-E, not like the race. Indie game dot, the movie .com. That's a good pick, $9.99.
Yeah,
I'm going to buy it right after the show.
So, Leo, are you going to start producing movies?
No. I don't know. Maybe I should.
That could be kind of cool, right?
Should we do
Remember startup.com?
Twit the movie? Yeah.
Right? Which was. I still have the T-shirt from the failed startup from GovWorks. And I remember they used to come into our offices and try to pitch us, and they were all full of hubris. And I told them to go blow. And thank goodness. And it's a hilarious. It was going to be a movie about a startup being wonderful, or trying to be a movie about a startup being a failure.
Right.
Right.
Well, you never know, do you?
You don't know. But you have, I think, the Twit brand.
You know what's interesting about this indie game? They also have it on Steam and iTunes. So they're very smart.
Yeah.
Whoever's doing this, they've got it. Steam, I didn't know Steam delivered content as well as games.
See, the other thing you get to, too, is there's a lot more moves towards serial content.
Right.
Right. So there's a startup in
Boston. No, that's what I've wanted to do.
Yeah, and I think you could add up to a movie.
I want to get somebody, a great screenwriter, somebody like the guy who wrote The Wire or something like that, to write a serial where at the end of every show it's like, no, oh, and that's how you can get people back every week, right?
Yeah.
We could do that here. Twit the movie. As long as George Clooney plays me, I'm happy.
And not John Goodman. We know you wouldn't like that.
Not John Goodman. Leo Laporte has been in his office for 48 days eating ho-hos. I need carbs. So would you like to give us a number? I think you have like 30 numbers.
None of them are great, by the way.
They're
great. It's hard to imagine how
I
the
like
number
the first one.
Shouldn't. Well, so Marissa Meyer reportedly gave 30 minutes notice.
To Google.
To Google.
I am out of here.
And Yahoo insisted upon it because they didn't want Google to come back and offer her, you know, the island of Rhodesia.
So it was Yahoo said, okay, we will hire you, but you can only tell Google 30 minutes before you walk out the door.
Yeah, yeah. So I kind of like that.
12:30 p.m., July 16th. That's when she dropped the Q-bomb.
Yeah.
I quit.
What do you think the reaction was? When I quit Entertainment Weekly, I know full well that the executives at Time Inc. were very happy about it.
I think that.
What do you think?
I think that everybody was very, said, oh, Marissa, we wish you the best. You've been great. We've loved working with you.
We had nothing for
you. We
had
nothing for you. Yeah, so, I mean, it's obvious.
Yeah. So I think the other number you have to mention this week is 47%, but that speaks for itself. If I may give a tip.
I'm not going to say anything.
No. Mm-hmm. Are you getting in trouble for that, too?
Oh, yeah. We try to stay apolitical here.
Oh, okay. All right.
There. You know, it's the reason is I am just a horrible liberal. Mm-hmm. I am.
Yeah, you're gushy hearted.
I am a bleeding heart liberal atheist. And much of our audience is exactly polar opposites. So we have agreed, I and they, not to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that way we get along.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I could start in here, but I won't. I'll spare you. I also have a tip, is that the $25 credit for buying a Nexus 7 ends the end of the month. So if you're going to buy one, folks, now's the time.
That's a movie credit and
store
credit.
Yeah, Google Play.
Google Play credit, yeah. So get one now.
I haven't spent that. Right. I haven't spent that yet.
Yeah, I haven't either, actually. Isn't that funny?
I watched five episodes of Downton Abbey in the flight on the way out.
Such a good show.
It actually is. It actually is.
Oh, it's...
The first episode I was ready to kill.
I forget, you're a TV critic.
The first episode I was getting mad at the British class system. I was getting really... Kevin, defend your country. Defend your landsmen here. I was getting so angry at
the
structure.
That's the point of the show.
I know it is. I know it is.
That's the dramatic tension.
Yeah,
it's
I know.
Upstairs, downstairs.
Yeah, I know. I know. But there's just a tolerance of this inanity. Makes me feel warm.
That's the thing. Even though the unstable thing would have been to make the upper class people evil, but they're not. They're just like oblivious.
Oblivious.
Yes, yes, yes.
And you know what? That's the point of the show because there's progress through the show towards.
And I'm really glad I read a book.
It's how World War I changes that class system.
I read a great book called The Institutional Revolution a few months ago, and explained the economic basis of the aristocracy of not working. It was hostage capital. That if the monarch needed to trust someone, that someone had to invest everything in that lifestyle.
Well, that's interesting. Because if they didn't know how to make or do anything.
Precisely. Then they were stuck. They were hostage. And if you sent your daughter to court to marry or work as lady in waiting, if you messed up, you ain't gonna see her again. And so you had this notion of hostage capital, which is really very interesting. So this illogic of the aristocracy. It's incredibly, incredibly illogical. And that book explained it well, so that helped actually with watching Downton Abbey.
Right, I let you get over your anger.
But as an American, of course, people now yell at me. You're always feeling like an American because I am one.
You're 99% or anger,
or 53% or 47% or
what is it? 53.
The greatest thing that came out today is Jon Stewart. Just on that, I had an old video of Romney's mother talking about how they survived on the dole for a year.
Right,
it was a great moment.
Kevin, we said your pick could be
Indie Game, the movie.
The movie. All right.
Yes.
So you agree with me. I didn't want to take the pick out of your hands.
No, absolutely. I think, having seen that, that was a wonderful film, and anyone who cares about geekery should watch it.
I did that once to Eric Clapton. He beat the crap out of me.
And apparently, also, people have said they've used it to explain what they do to their parents. It's like, show this, and you'll understand why programming do this thing.
That's good.
So that's...
There was a good movie about cosplay I used to show my mother what I do. That's another story entirely. My tool is very simple. If you go to maps.google.com, we had a great guy named Tertius Carstens out of Houston come here. Now, Google Internal Street View, they don't do it. They have trusted photographers who do it.
Oh.
And we paid Tertius. He contacted us, and he said, I will do it. I think it was $800. You'd pay by the number of pictures he takes.
Jeez.
Carstens 360. But it was worth it, Jeff.
Oh, it's beautiful.
C-A-R-S-T-E-N-S.
The hilarious thing is that they pixelated the faces.
They have to.
I know, but it looked like you're in the porn business here.
I know. It's weird. And we got a discount. But I think that the price ranges in that range. It's by the number of pictures.
So what
go to maps.google.com. Search for Twit. He uses a normal camera with an 8mm, very wide angle, 8mm uh-huh. lens. In fact, you can see it in some of the images. So show my screen, if you will, whatever your name is. Chad. He's in the pictures, actually. And so if you search for Twit, you'll see our listing in Google Places. And the key is that look inside on the picture there. There's a little street view guy.
I used it before coming here so I could know where the men's room was.
Yeah. We didn't do the basement yet, so I might get Tertius to come
back.
There's a basement. And there's a lot of Easter eggs in this.
Cool.
So you can, and you've been here, Kevin, so you know that this is. Yeah. And by the way, one of the side benefits we didn't realize is you can read every brick. So if you bought a brick,
I was looking for mine.
Zoom in on the bricks.
And
you can literally, that's how the high quality, there. You can get so much out of this. So if you will wander into the studio, I guess I've zoomed out so much now. I'm zoomed in so much. Nope. Clicking.
I have problems with the UI of Street
It's
View.
A little disconcerting. You can read what's on people's desks.
Ooh.
You can, I mean, there's little things going on. And some of the people appear twice. Andy Inako from Mac Break Weekly and Chicago Sun-Times is sitting there. He's actually doing a show with the chat room. You could see our CEO, Lisa. Her face is blurred in one picture, but There's one picture where she's not blurred.
Oh, they messed up?
Well, I don't know if messed up is the right word. But
they must have some standard about how big the face is.
Maybe that's it. And it turns out, apparently, if the face is on TV, they don't have to blur it.
Because it's already public.
Because it's already public. Yeah. So the faces here aren't blurred. But anyway, if you...
It's really great.
Oh, it's just a really fun thing. And this is not something Google does for free, but any business with a Google Place listing can do this if you contract with an existing...
How large is the pool of authorized photographers?
You know, it doesn't look huge. It's maybe 25 photographers. Mm-hmm. I'll put a link, because I don't know the exact link. But you can see there's his tripod, right? So he shoots in four directions, and then there's special stitching software that's... Google will stitch it for you, but a good provider does the work ahead of time and then uploads it to Google. Plus, if you're getting a Google-approved provider, it's much faster to get this on. He got this on the same day that he shot it, so there I am sitting at my desk, and you can zoom in on stuff.
They didn't blur your dog's face.
No, dogs are not private individuals. They are public. So there's Ozzy. You can see how much you can zoom in on it. So all you have to do is search for Twit on Google Maps and then click the thing, and you can see, you know, everything. Everything's here.
Did you hide anything beforehand?
I didn't think to, because I didn't realize how high resolution it is. So there is some private stuff in there, which I'll leave for you as an exercise to the reader. You can read all the titles on the bookshelf. I mean, this is how good it is.
Wow.
It's really amazing.
What kind of camera is he using?
I don't even think he was using like a high-end Canon. It was a SLR, but kind of probably a D60 or something like that. Wow. You can read the credit card numbers on my desk and everything. Yeah, that's good. I've canceled all those credit cards, so don't worry. You can see what model TV we're using. So this is a fun thing to do. But yeah, a little bit of advice to business owners who do this. You might want to clear out the personal. It's really high resolution. It was a 60D with an 8mm fisheye lens, according to Gene Miola in the chat room. If you go in you can go in the kitchen and see Andy stealing snacks and all sorts of things. Jeff, it's so great
it's
to have
wonderful
you here.
To be
I really
here.
Am
and great
thrilled.
To meet other staff members here at Twit HQ.
Yeah, your
it's
first
a great
time.
Bunch. And very importantly, Ozzy.
Ozzy, the
Love
wonder
Ozzy.
Dog. Yeah, what are you Ozzy. Waving at?
I have another tip to add. Just released today, you can actually grab the little Street View guy.
Yeah.
And there are now orange dots around businesses who have also participated.
Oh, so there's quite a few.
Yeah, yeah. So now you can see that in the...
Go into our local hardware store.
Right. So that's the...
Wow.
So, and it looks like there's a New Yorker pizza thing right
Sal
here.
Sal did that, huh? Well, that's my favorite pizza in town.
Right, so there you go. We can go straight
Sal's
in.
New Yorker pizza. Look at
actually
the
jeweler
store.
Yeah, so the jeweler did it apparently.
So did he make more business while he was in town?
I hope so.
I don't know if Tertius.
I actually
did
believe that he's based in Houston, but because he was
Houston?
A fan, he flew up. Yeah.
Wow, I had no idea that many businesses were doing this.
Right, and it's actually kind of there's a few in Petaluma. There's a whole bunch if you just in this
Bovine Bakery because
there's
that's
one
my
there's
favorite
one
bakery,
there's
yeah.
one.
So his website is Karstens, Carstens. That's my apartment. Wait a minute. No. Go back a little bit.
Oh, sorry.
That's actually my... Oh, that's the graffiti restaurant.
Right.
I live above that bar.
Right. Right.
Do they send up?
Right. So graffiti
they
right
do
there
send
is...
up, as a matter of fact. That's cool.
Yeah.
I should do a tour of my apartment.
Right. Why not?
No, this is his website. Carstens 3... There it is.
There
go ahead. Show the apartment. I'll show you. I can show you. See that red thing? Go up. No, that's not it. Oh, that's across the street. Anyway, never mind. You could probably find my Mustang if you look. This is his site, Carstens360.com. But there are others that do this as well. You could search for Google Street View photography.
This is my maps discussion from earlier, which is that Google is really investing effort in doing very, very high-quality measurement of the world, precisely because this is their way of making it more useful and be able to sell advertising and routing and business and stuff there. They're playing a very long game here.
Yeah, very long game because it doesn't, you know, I guess what happens is people start to think, what are they up to, right?
Right. But the thing is, it's the same thing. They're providing utility. So because they're providing utility to you with the mapping, you don't mind them. You don't mind the Street View cars.
Precisely.
That much.
It's a huge utility. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. This is you just reminded me of something else. This would be a tool of the week if he actually shipped it. A friend of mine at at the XOXO conference made a little iOS app, because, you know, if you ask for transit directions, it outsources that to third-party apps. So he made a little third-party app that opens Google Maps and shows you the transit on that.
Wow, that's cool. But it's not released yet.
Probably won't get approved by the store because of what it's doing. But basically, right. he hooks that. There's a, you know, if you click the directions thing, it says try and get a local directions app. With the idea that people can build them, and you know, and there are transit apps for a lot of cities. And he just said, "Oh, just pass it over to the web and let Google try." So
wow, cool. No,
that's quite cute.
Kevin Marks, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you're having a great Dreamforce there in San Francisco. I appreciate your taking time out. I guess Jeff already did his. What was your talk on?
Media, the changes in media to the guy who handles the media clients there. And it's really amazing because as I'm arguing, not to sell Salesforce, but as I'm arguing, and they did bring me out, that media companies have to be in the relationship business. They need a platform to figure that out. So that's why it made sense.
Well, I think this was a lot of fun. And thank you both for being here. I really appreciate it. We do Twig on Wednesday afternoons right after Security Now. That's about 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC on twit.tv. Do watch live. It's really nice to see everybody yelling at us in the chat room. We like that. every time, all I have to say is tracking cookie and
Google Plus.
Google Plus.
Romney.
I don't mean to be controversial. I'm just a puffy little fuzzball. we do love having you here live. We actually do read the chat room. I may flip it off from time to time off camera, but I read it. And if you can't watch live, we do love it if you download. In fact, best to subscribe if you want to support the show. That helps us out a lot on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, or just download on-demand versions from twit.tv/twig. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next Wednesday on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.